Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. It is hour two. We are live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Got to tell you, just feeling good now. It was a typical night in L.A. last night. I watched the Lakers, they won. I watched the Clippers for an hour, they won. I watched the Dodgers for an hour, they won.
What do you do out here?
I mean, it's incredible. I've never been in a city. It's so easy because L.A.'s got a lot of transplants, right? So a lot of people live here. 40% of the people who live here aren't from here, maybe 50%. And when you move to a town and you're a sports fan, you end up watching the local teams a lot because they're always on television. The Laker games are all on. The Clipper games are all on. The Dodger games are all on. This is an easy town to kind of like the local teams. When I moved to Tampa, you know, the Buccaneers were on television 24/7. So were the Florida Gators. So were the Seminoles. You start, like, watching the games. You start kind of liking the system and liking the coach. And Bobby Bowden was the coach. He was impossible not to like. He kind of become a Seminoles fan. In Los Angeles, this is the best baseball team I've ever seen. I have watched their – they've played, like, 11 or 12 games, Dodgers. I've watched 8 or 9. They have trailed once. It is the best staff. It's the best batting order. They've got power everywhere. They're great defensively. They're good situationally. I mean, they make you want to be a baseball fan. Like, you turn the Dodgers on, it's just everybody can hit. Everybody, Trevor Bauer's unhittable. It's an incredible team. You know, I was thinking about this watching the Lakers, though, is that in LeBron's history, when he leaves a team, they're all bad. Even the well-run teams like Miami. And when LeBron takes games off, they're also bad. It's one thing LeBron leaves, your team stinks. But even when LeBron has taken games off, you're like, the team's not the same. In fact, they're bad. The Lakers last year to me, and I doubted they could win. I said they didn't feel like a championship team. Rondo was old. And Dwight Howard was 100 years past his prime. And Danny Green was old. And JaVale McGee. It was a bunch of guys out of their prime. LeBron out of his prime. And AD had never played in big games. But I'm watching the Lakers over the last week. They've won 6 of 10. And they're not going to win a championship without LeBron and AD. But they've got like 7 good players in their prime. Dennis Schroeder in his prime. Andre Drummond in his prime. KCP in his prime. Kyle Kuzma in his prime. Montrezl Harrell in his prime. Talen Horton-Tucker's not, but he's their best young player. He's a really good player. LeBron loves him. You watch this Laker team right now. They would be a 500 team without LeBron. Miami could have been maybe, but if you go back to that Miami team, it was small. They weren't very good at point with Mario Chalmers. It was one of the smaller teams, one of the poor rebounding teams. LeBron really was the dependable. Remember, D. Wade was older. He couldn't play great in back-to-backs. This Laker team is a 500 NBA team. They're not going to beat the Nets without him. They're not going to beat the Sixers. They're not going to beat Denver, Utah. But generally, championship teams, the heart of your roster is in its prime. Now, your star may be older, and one of your guys off the bench may be older. But the Lakers, mostly, AD's in his prime. Kuzma's in his prime. Drummond's in his prime. KCP's in his prime. And I watched it last night, and I'm like, they got dudes everywhere. Dennis Schroeder's in their prime. It's a really good basketball team. Now, I contend they'd be a playoff team. They'd be probably a top 4 or 5 seed in the East without LeBron. And in the West, they'd probably sneak in at the bottom half. But it's kind of frightening. Like, why would you play AD and LeBron now? What's the point? AD's brittle. LeBron's old. Just wait till the playoffs get here. Wait for 2 weeks out. They are really, really good. They are. This roster, this is as good a roster, as athletic a roster, as deep a roster as LeBron's ever played on. When you got 8 pro athletes in there, and they can all play, Drummond can play, he's an all-star. KCP can play, was huge in the bubble last year. People bang on Kuzma, but Kuzma does pop these 25-point games all the time. It's a really good basketball team without LeBron. Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Subs coming later this hour. I know you think I'm an L.A. homer, and I understand that, but when your teams are all great, what do you do? Am I supposed to come on here and pretend the Mavericks are going to beat them? I can't. What do you want me to do? It's like LA every night. You turn the TV on, your teams win.
You can't be like a homer for like five different cities, though. Like you're like a New England homer, you're a Tampa Bay homer, a Seattle homer, you're a Lakers homer. So I'm saying you're not a homer.
I like good teams.
Yes.
You know, Joel Klatt's going to come on now. The draft is a couple weeks out. He's our draft analyst, our number one draft analyst. He goes to the draft, and he's all dialed in on this stuff. I got to give Klatt credit, and let's bring him on live. He holds 44, he set 44 school records as the quarterback at Colorado. Now, many of them were most incompletions and pick sixes, but nonetheless, I looked it up, 44 school records. That is it. You know what? I give you a lot of crud. You weren't bad, Klatt. You were pretty good.
You know, it's better to be smart than good. I went to a school that used to run the option. That's how you do it.
That is no kidding. You right. are. There you go. Good call. So I look at these quarterbacks, and I've said this two or three times today. When smart people do things, and I think they're smarter than me, I may not agree, but at some point I think to myself, well, smart people run the world. Kyle Shanahan knows more football, forgets more than I'll ever know, and he's in on Mac Jones. And I thought last night, okay, quit trying to be right. What does he see that you don't? And I thought, there's a stat out there. The most passing yards in the first 16 games of an NFL career for a quarterback. Mahomes is one. Nick Mullins is two. And Shanahan's saying, I don't want an athlete. I don't want a guy freelancing out of my offense. I just need a guy that'll sit back there, pre-snap, all design the play. This is what Matt LaFleur told Aaron Rodgers. Stop freelancing. You're freelancing out of my plays. Run the offense. You'll be great. Aaron Rodgers had his best year in a decade. So I look at Mac Jones and I have all these doubts and I think Shanahan's saying, listen, I'm the star, not the quarterback. Just deliver. I'll get us there. Do you think I'm nuts on that?
I mean, that's how I feel when I come on and talk about college football. I need you to just like get out of the way, right? No, I think that's accurate. And it's one of the reasons, listen, I'm high on Mac Jones. Now, I don't think I would take Mac Jones over a Justin Fields, but, you know, for a guy like Kyle Shanahan, he looks at the success that he's had with quarterbacks in the past, right? Whether it's Matt Schaub, who he had a lot of success with, or a guy like Matt Ryan, who he had a lot of success with. What those guys do well is that they're anticipatory throwers. They throw with a great touch down the field, and they understand defensive structures. They can play from under center. They can play from shotgun. They're good in play action pass. They're good in drop back pass. You know, they can manipulate the defense underneath. They can throw the layered ball. So it's a well-rounded quarterback, and it's not necessarily a guy with a skill set that's going to just blow you away, right? Because let's face it now, even with a guy like Mahomes doing what he's doing, or Lamar Jackson doing what he's doing, or some of these other guys with unbelievable skills, it still takes a guy that's going to sit into the pocket and control the game, right? Like, that's what a quarterback does, and to a large extent, that's what Mac Jones did. Now, there are some concerns with Mac Jones. One is, you know, he only played 1 year. He also played with the best players around him. So how does that convert? I've talked a lot with Matt Leinart about this and how that affected him from going to USC to going to the NFL, and how all of a sudden the level of competition was fair and leveled out. And and you don't have, you know, Devontae Smith on the outside. You don't have Jalen Waddle. You don't have Najee Harris. You don't have Steve Sarkisian designing the plays for you creatively. So, but to your point, I think Kyle Shanahan could have a lot of success with a guy like Mac Jones. I just think he might be a reach up there where the 49ers are at.
So you do a lot of Big Ten games. I like Justin Fields, a little inconsistent. But there's obviously, if San Francisco's taking Mac Jones, there's stuff people see they don't like. Now, I said this, I'm not sure if I said this last week. Yeah, I think it was last week. I said, whereas Alabama dominates their conference, but they still have to face Georgia and Auburn and Florida and LSU, NFL players everywhere. The gap between Ohio State's talent and even a Penn State's pretty darn large. And that, like, Ohio State quarterbacks, boy, you can run those, you know, those underneath routes to Paris Campbell, and they're six. And sometimes stats for Ohio State quarterbacks are a little deceiving, whereas Mac Jones still has to beat LSU's personnel. Is the knock on Fields maybe, we don't know really what he is, because Ohio State's personnel is so much better than everybody else they face.
Well, I mean, I think you could say that about Bama last year, right? And I think that the SEC was a little bit down last year compared to what Alabama was. It's interesting that you bring up this narrative around Ohio State quarterbacks, because it's actually false. And I like sit back for a second, because it's statistically inaccurate. Okay, Justin Fields is a far different player than what Dwayne Haskins was. This is the comparison, right? This is what people are starting to say is like, well, it's the same offense under Ryan Day, and Dwayne Haskins hasn't panned out. And so maybe this Fields stuff is not quite what we think it is, because it's overblown because of Ohio State. But they played far different games. Let me just give you an example. Do you know that Dwayne Haskins, in his year under Ryan Day, he was 41st in the Power Five among quarterbacks in terms of production before yards after the catch? So air yards.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
How many yards, how much of his production was just through the air? He was 41st, okay? It was around 50% of his production. So he was throwing to guys like Terry McLaurin and Paris Campbell, and he was utilizing the speed, and they were killing Don Brown's defense at Michigan State with the crossing routes. And he was very accurate as a tall passer, just getting the ball out almost like a dart thrower. Bang, 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 bang. Okay, now how was that different than Justin Fields? Well, okay, Haskins was 41st in the Power Five. Both seasons that Justin Fields just played at Ohio State, he was the number one quarterback in the Power Five as far as production through the air. Okay, so this guy was much more of a down-the-field passer than was Haskins. It was a totally different offense. 70% 1 year, 71% the other, in terms of his production being through the air rather than after the catch. It's part of the reason why he holds the ball in the pocket. Why? Because they were attacking down the field. When you're running down the field, intermediate and deep read routes, which they did quite often with a guy like Chris Olave, who's a silky smooth wide receiver from the slot, what you have to do is hold the pocket so that you can read the middle read in the intermediate zone. That's very difficult to do for a quarterback. Did you also know that he was one of, if not the most accurate passer when he did throw the football down the field? The narrative about Justin Fields is completely false, folks. All right, the numbers back it up. If you turn on the film, that backs it up. And even this whole narrative that he's inconsistent, totally false. He had one bad game in his college career. It was Indiana. He was forcing the football. He learned from it. Did you know that the next time that they got into some trouble against Northwestern, when they didn't have Olave on the field as a wide receiver, what did he do? He managed the game beautifully. His statistics wouldn't blow you the way, but he was getting them into the right run play to the tune of Trey Sermon's breaking the Ohio State single game rushing record that Eddie George had held. He ran for over 300 yards. Then he goes out against Clemson and maybe has one of the best performances that we've ever seen. Take Justin Fields in the draft. My goodness, this narrative is totally false. And that's why I think any of those teams up there should absolutely look at him with a second look and draft him when they can.
That's pretty good. Yeah, you were worth your money on that one. All right, now I'm going to throw you a real zinger. So I have this thing that whatever you're good in life, you will lean into. You know, if you're a big buff guy, you'll go to the gym and wear a medium t-shirt. If you're a singer, you'll sing in the shower, sing in the car. So Zach Wilson is, quote, great in chaos. Yeah, so is Brett Favre, and he's the all-time leader in picks. Is that if you're good in chaos, you kind of like chaos. You get a little addicted to chaos because you're good at it. And I look at the Jets and I think, well, God, the whole organization's chaos. I don't want more chaos. I look at Zach Wilson and I think, can he play in structure? It's great to be great in chaos against Air Force. Okay, last year BYU's schedule, because of the pandemic, was the worst schedule they'd played in years. Usually BYU plays a good schedule. And I hear all this Zach Wilson chaos stuff and I think, I don't want my quarterback. Maybe that worked in the gunslinger era. 99% of Mahomes' touchdowns are not in chaos. What do you make of that? Zach Wilson's great in chaos.
Part of it is that he relies on his arm a little bit too much. And it's an epic arm, Colin. I got to, like, he makes some throws. When you watch BYU play, and I don't care the level of competition, he makes a few throws every game that just like make me, I watch film on my iPad, right? And I just like put the iPad down and I'm like, wow, like what would that be like to throw the football like that? That's his off-platform arm talent is as good as I've seen in a long time. Now, it's not Mahomes, but the dude can absolutely sling it. And to your point about we tend to lean into what we're great at, part of the thing with Zach Wilson is that he knows he can make every single throw.
Right.
So he doesn't take what I would call the bunnies or what the defense gives you right away. See, some quarterbacks understand that they have to take what the defense gives all the time, and then when a big play arises, then they're going to hit the defense. Whereas Wilson thinks that he can create a big play with that arm talent at any moment. That can be problematic in the NFL, and I think he's going to have to learn how not to do that. He also played behind absolutely his best offensive line in his 3 years last year. And when you're talking about the margin between the offensive line and the competition's defensive line, it was dramatic. That offensive line was really good for BYU, so he had a lot of time. He was able to sit there. And because of that, I think he got a false sense of confidence that he could sit around and then utilize that arm to make big-time throws. Now, he's a salty competitor. I think he's a really talented player. There's no doubt about it. And when he did play Power 5 competition in previous years, whether it was USC or Tennessee, you know, he played really well. So even though their schedule wasn't great, I think that you can still say that this guy can rise to the occasion when the playing field is leveled. I certainly think he's an early first-round pick. I wouldn't take him before Justin Fields, but that's only because Fields consistently was a more accurate passer, played in a system that I think translates to the NFL a little bit better and sooner than a Zach Wilson. And Wilson at times can just sit there and rely on his arm. Fabulous player, there's no doubt, but there's some things that are going to have to iron itself out.
By the way, we talk a lot of quarterbacks because you have 44 Colorado records, and we have to acknowledge you are a guru at that. But let's defense for a second. It is a weird draft where at the top of the draft, it's quarterbacks, wide receivers, tight ends, O-linemen. Yes. A couple years ago, it was all defense in the top. Now it's all offense. Who is the best defensive prospect out there?
Yeah, good question. I think Micah Parsons would probably be, you know, your answer from most people, and I certainly would second that. He's a terrific player, right? Great instincts. He can play all over the field. They played more zone coverage than man. It was a heavy zone scheme, so I don't know what he is from a coverage standpoint, because remember, he was more of a defensive end in high school and then moved back, so playing in space, I think, is going to have to iron itself out, but he's very talented. Here's a guy to just keep your eye on, because I think he's a hybrid player that's going to fit, and if somebody has a plan for him, he's going to do really well. That's Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Right? This guy is a playmaker, and he's going to slip because people are going to be like, well, I don't know where he fits. But if somebody has vision and a plan for Owusu-Koramoah, I think they're going to get a great player.
You know, it's funny you talk about that. I remember having an NBA GM 20 years ago tell me that. He goes, Bob Whitsett told me this. It was the Blazer GM. He said, we're moving into an era of the positionless players in the NBA. You got 6'9 guys can handle the ball. Ben Simmons is a 6'10 point. You're seeing it in the NFL, too. Guy's a great athlete, and you're just moving him all around. Quarterback, best athlete in high school now? Now plays quarterback. You're seeing Isaiah Simmons, Clemson. You're seeing this more and more where, okay, we got this kid. I mean, Kyle Pitts, is he a receiver or tight end? If he lost eight pounds, he's a wide.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, I do think we're getting to a point now where if a guy's honey badger's always been that for me. All I know is instinctively, he's about the best football player. Instinctively, he's always around the ball.
Yeah, not every single time. This is a gross generalization, but when you take a guy that like fits neatly into a box because of measurables and other types of things that are not just play on the field, they tend to underwhelm on the field versus guys that are just like, hey, my coach used to say this term. We always used to roll our eyes, but like, hey, man, he's just a football playing Jesse, right? Like, Owusu-Koramoah is just going to make plays.
Right.
Find a place for him on the football field, and he's going to impact the game positively for your defense.
Yeah, in fact, I had a general manager tell me a month ago, and Greg Cosell echoed this, right tackle, left tackle. Increasingly, can you play tackle? I may move you, you know, if you know, Slater for Northwestern, he can play either tackle or either guard.
Well, and remember now, I think that left tackle used to be a bigger deal when teams were predominantly right-handed, and I'm not talking about just the throwing arm of their quarterback. I'm talking about their run strength. You know, when I first came up in football, it was like you put your best offensive lineman on the right side, and your right side running schemes were better than your left side running schemes. It was just teams were right-handed. So what happened? They generally put their tight end to the right side, and these were inline tight ends. And when you have an inline tight end, even in a passing play, that defensive end doesn't get a clean rush on the right tackle. So that's why it was always more important to have a good pass protector as your left tackle. Well, guess what we don't have anymore? Really any like strength as far as right or left. And we also don't have a ton of inline tight ends. So the right tackle is on an edge just as much as the left tackle is. And to your point, I think it's absolutely accurate. You've got to have two really good pass protecting tackles. And I think that was evident in the Super Bowl when Kansas City just could not keep Patrick Mahomes upright or into the pocket.
I love these opportunities to teach you about the game, Klatt. That's why I bring you on. It means a lot to me to just give you a little edge you didn't have before you showed up.
Oh, you're a beaut. I got to tell you, absolute beaut. 44 school records. That's right.
Yeah, some of them are very impressive. True. Yeah. All right, Klatt.
There were a couple that are okay. Not all of them.
Good seeing you, buddy.
You too, bud. Have a good one.
Joel Klatt. Yeah, it is. We're athletes now are bigger, stronger. Just get them on the field.
Taysom Hill.
Just get them on the field. Just figure out a way to make it work. And it's. And I remember when Bob Witsit told me that. He goes, you media people, you know, I was a media. You media people are all into labels. He's got to be a shooting guard. He's like, guy 6'7", can shoot, can handle the ball. He's a good basketball player. I just want him on the floor. You guys are all caught up in a 1 and a 3 and a 4. He's like, it's not the way it is anymore.
I think people that are contributing in roles can do that. I think somebody like a quarterback, while they need to be an athlete, still needs to have those traditional factors.
I mean, Joel Embiid's going to be a center.
Right.
But he can handle the ball.
Yeah.
He can shoot.
The more that you can expand your skills, obviously, the more valuable you are.
That's right. All right. Are sandwiches here yet?
I think in about 40
okay.
minutes.
We take a break. I thought on Aaron Rodgers. I know everybody thinks he's leaving Green Bay, but what Green Bay is doing, I'm going to make an argument today, is just a strategy. They're not trying to diss Aaron. It's just a strategy. I'll talk about that coming up, The Herd.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Saturday on Fox, the MLS is back. Catch Austin FC as they make their league debut against Carlos Vela and LAFC. The action kicks off at 5:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Are you going to give me your tickets for LAFC?
Oh, you know what? I am a season ticket holder, but I actually bought, Joy, I bought Charger season tickets.
Really?
Yeah, this year. Nothing against LAFC. By the way, my earplug fell out. I bought Charger season tickets, and I gave them to my business manager because I'm very thoughtful.
Oh, so you don't have the tickets for LAFC?
I'm not sure if I'm going to. It's not that I don't like it. It's just that LA has got so many great sports teams. I'm having to make choices here.
Right. Well, you probably stole the plug, so.
And Justin Herbert likes me. And so I feel a certain loyalty to the former Oregon Duck. And you can buy a bunch of season tickets in LA, and the Chargers are very well priced for what you get.
Yeah.
50-yard line seats were really, really affordable. Upstairs a little bit, not like first. And I'm like, I'm always going to have an LA season ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I did LAFC, and my kids loved it. It's, by the way, it's a great environment. This year, I'm gonna go on the Chargers a few years.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm going to use my power. LAFC, I'd like to come to a game.
It's really fun. It really is fun.
I know. I want to go. It looks fun.
Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news. This is the Herdline News. Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Well, we knew this was coming, but it is now official. The Browns have added Jadeveon Clowney to their roster. 1-year deal, reportedly worth up to $10 million. He is coming off of a torn meniscus that ended his 2020 season with the Titans. He played in 8 games,
Didn't
have a sack, but is still a contributor and a playmaker. He played 16 games only once in his career, 2017, with the Texans. He's not going to be somebody that you need to rely on for the full season,
No. But
just another piece to add to a very talented roster.
When Russell Wilson was on a rookie contract, Seattle went out and signed Percy Harvin, and Percy had these major headaches. You were getting Percy for the playoffs because you knew you were good. You just wanted to be able to design a few plays for Percy one later in the year. Jadeveon Clowney is all about December on. He's not about the early season. Can he get healthy late in the year? Because, you know, Jadeveon Clowney is not as good as we thought. He's not. But the idea that he can't play, I would love to have Jadeveon Clowney for 1 year on my roster to make a play week 13 through the playoffs.
And that has extreme value. Those are the guys that you want to have in those contributing moments.
Antonio Brown. Another wide receiver option. You got him for big games late.
Sometimes when you get those big name guys, and this happens in the NBA as well, you focus too much on what their name is and what their game used to be or what the expectations for their game were, like Jadeveon Clowney, and then you expect them to be an every down, every single game contributor, and that's not what they've been brought in to do. So that shouldn't be the expectations of the situation.
We saw it last year. Playoff Rondo. You do not get Rondo for the Atlanta game in January.
Right.
They call him Playoff Rondo. He was terrific in the finals for the Lakers. Totally disruptive. That's why the Clippers got him for the playoffs.
I really like the Browns defense, though.
Oh, no. Listen, they have a competent coach, and they have a general manager. They're doing what people wish. Now, Green Bay can't do this because they pay Aaron Rodgers $40 million a year.
Right.
But this is Cleveland's at least doing what you should do. When you have a rookie contract, sign a bunch of these one-year deals and get stars who can make plays situationally in December and January.
So Mac Jones has been rumored to be the 49ers' top target since the team traded up to the third pick. They're still doing their due diligence, and they're attending Justin Fields' pro day today and Trey Lance's on Monday. But an anonymous NFL GM told Mike Sando of The Athletic that he is confident that Mac Jones is Kyle's guy. I don't see it. I don't know. We keep hearing this. I think we really don't know. Past Trevor Lawrence, I don't think we actually really know. I mean, obviously, the Jets seem pretty set as well. But I don't see it.
All these guys have a thing. Like with Mac Jones, accuracy.
Right.
Trey Lance, wow, athletic. Trevor Lawrence, size, arm, stature. Zach Wilson, a little bit of a Favre, Aaron Rodgers, ad-lib guy. They've all got something. Like Justin Fields, he looks like a receiver with his shirt off. Like,
but the only prospect that really feels like it's like this is the move is Trevor Lawrence. Like there's something that you can take from
he's a prodigy.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. I don't think we really know what's happening, even though there's Zach Wilson to the Jets seems to be the consensus. I don't really agree that Mac Jones is either.
Well, here's the thing. Can Zach Wilson win games in the NFL with the fourth best coach in a division? Because Robert Saleh is not going to be better than Sean McDermott and Belichick. And early indications are Brian Flores is great. Okay, can let's say Trey Lance goes to Denver. Well, Vic Fangio is not Andy Reid. So, you start asking yourself for all these young quarterbacks, who do they get as coach?
But no, I mean, where you go as a young quarterback absolutely matters. I mean, if you look at even Baker Mayfield, what he's had to overcome in Cleveland is actually quite remarkable. I mean, that was a big factor in his first few years in the league to how we evaluate him. I mean, Josh Allen going to Buffalo, godsend for him. There's not a lot of places that have been that patient with him in those first 2 years to get him to where he is now. So, yeah, absolutely where they go matters, which is why we're so confident in whoever the 49ers pick is going to be successful. I don't get it with Alabama quarterbacks, and I didn't see it with Mac Jones last year during the season, and no one was talking about him this way coming out of the college football season. So I don't know what happened between the end of the college football season and now that he has jumped Justin Fields and all these other guys for that matter as well. Like, you were talking about him like he was a second or third round pick, and now all of a sudden he might go 3 overall if the 49ers trade multiple first round picks up to get him. I guess we'll see. We've got years to find out, but I don't see it. So Julian Edelman announced his retirement Monday, and that sparked the discussion of whether he was someone who would make it into the Hall of Fame. And LeSean McCoy would argue that Edelman hasn't done enough to earn the nod.
Hall of Famer, because it's postseason.
Nah, come on, man. I mean, I think that, like, you have 16 weeks to showcase who you are, what you can do, you know, each year. You know, I think the playoffs matter, but there's a lot of guys that don't get a chance to play in the playoffs. I mean, I play with some of them guys. And I won't discredit MB for him, because I think he's a great player. He plays with a lot of heart, a lot of attitude. lot of passion. So I don't want to knock on his parade because he's, you know, retiring. He's a hell of a player. I don't know about the Hall of Fame.
Well, McCoy also said that he has a good shot at making the Hall of Fame. And so I wanted to look at both of their, you know, resumes, their statistics. LeSean McCoy's made 6 Pro Bowls. He's been first team All-Pro twice. 15,000 yards from scrimmage. Averages 88.2 yards per game. 89 total touchdowns. And they've both won multiple Super Bowls. Edelman has 3 and LeSean McCoy has 2.
Yeah, I mean,
like, LeSean McCoy has a much better Hall of Fame resume than Edelman.
Shady said something. He goes, you can't just judge a guy in postseason. I would never punish a guy like Calvin Johnson who didn't get to the postseason. Calvin's a Hall of Famer. But I do think Eli Manning and Edelman, that's why they get the nod, because they were so unbelievable in the postseason. So, again, I would never knock a guy and, like, Phillip Rivers.
If you don't have a large postseason resume, I think your regular season resume needs to be undeniable, which is why I think Phillip Rivers is a Hall of Famer.
Right.
And to your point, Eli Manning. But Eli Manning played for a very long time. He was never hurt. He had an unbelievable streak of starts. Like, even during the regular season, I think Eli Manning has a very decent resume. And then you add the fact that he won 2 Super Bowls against the greatest to ever do it in his prime. That's a Hall of Fame resume to me. I initially was like, yeah, Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer. I don't know. I think I'm with Nick now. Because especially for the NFL Hall of Fame, I think the NFL Hall of Fame is the most prestigious and the hardest to get into. And they have those standards. So it's kind of like, if you don't know that a guy's a Hall of Famer, like, if you kind of got to wonder, he's probably not getting into the NFL Hall of Fame. Because there's been guys who have waited a long time who are obviously Hall of Famers in the NFL. They're just more strict with how they
vote. Yeah, I would vote Edelman in. Totally get those who wouldn't. It's not worth arguing at a bar over.
Yeah.
I have a conviction, but I totally get it. Like, I'd put Eli in, but I get the people who say, there were many years he wasn't the best quarterback in his own division. I'm like, you could make that argument, certainly.
Right, and I think that while I'm with you, I think the postseason does matter a lot. What team you play for plays a huge factor in whether you're going to be playing in the postseason.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald has often been as good as his quarterback. So if you're a receiver, you are wholly dependent on your quarterback. I mean, like it's Julio Jones is great, but Matt Ryan's helped. Like, Matt Ryan and him.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, Edelman playing in that system with Belichick and Tom Brady helped him get to those Super Bowls where he was a contributor. But I think you just have to look at the whole body of work.
Good stuff, Joy Taylor, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Can't win a championship if you're terrible defensively. I'm going to bring in Kevin O'Connor of the Ringer next. We may argue about that. The Nets are so bad defensively. Historically, there is no precedent for them even getting to the finals. That's next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the smart guys covering the NBA, his name is Kevin O'Connor. He works for Bill Simmons, The Ringer. And I'm going to bring him on now because I got two big things I want to talk about. Let's bring on Kevin O'Connor, who we bring on from time to time. All right, two things I want to go after. I'm watching the Lakers in the last couple games. And you start going back to LeBron. When he leaves a team, they're awful. Even when he misses games, they're bad. And I'm looking at the Lakers last night, and I'm like, they got 8 guys in their prime. KCP, Dennis Schroeder, Andre Drummond, even Kyle Kuzma. And I'm like, this is a 500 NBA team without LeBron and AD. And it's why I think they should be the prohibitive favorite going forward. Your just kind of thoughts on what's around LeBron this year.
Colin, I'm with you that they are the favorites as long as LeBron and AD are healthy. And when you're dealing with an Achilles injury for AD, there's concern there. But they've been so cautious that I feel some level of confidence. They're not bringing those guys back unless they're healthy. And with their depth, the Lakers have far better than what the Heat had, far better than what the Cavs had off those benches. They had a bunch of older guys or near the end of their career or just younger and inexperienced. The Lakers have a bunch of guys who just are high IQ basketball players. And I think Kyle Kuzma really shows that more than anybody else with his evolution as a decision maker on the offensive end of the floor,
yeah.
Improved shot selection. Then defensively, he is so good on that end of the floor when he used to be a guy who was a negative. And that's a credit to him and the development that the Lakers have helped him facilitate.
Yeah, I mean, it's LeBron now has got to be looking at this thinking what they need is the man. But it's, you know, the late Kobe used to say, Kobe wanted to be the man. He didn't want to be the only man. And I really feel like this is a nice, athletic, big, long supporting cast for LeBron. Now let's go to the Nets. We may disagree. You know, generally with any argument, give me a precedent if I've seen it before. And I start looking at the Nets, and they are so bad defensively with really no rim protector. And they would have to go through an Embiid and a Giannis and an AD. I mean, Andre Drummond has given them fits against this lineup. And I look at them, Kevin, we do this, I do this, I fall in love with offense. But those Warriors teams had Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, elite defenders in their prime. Is Brooklyn capable enough defensively to win a title? Because there's no precedent you can be this bad and even get to a finals.
Yeah, they can. And if you look at the last 2 months, they've been 16th in defensive rating, which is average. I mean, I'm not saying they're a great defense by any means, but this team, their offense has a chance to be historic with Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. So they have that going for them. Everybody talks about, can they get stops? Well, who can stop them? But with their defense, I think one of the advantages they do have is the fact they have some versatility with the types of lineups they play. They have Nick Claxton, who can be a switchable defender. They have the fact they can use LaMarcus Aldridge now, who's more of that big guy. They have Blake Griffin, who has a little bit of versatility for you and a high IQ. They have DJ for the back of the bench, can play a little bit, you know, drop coverage and pick and roll. So they have different flavors on the defensive end of the floor. And I still feel like we look at this team and they've won so many games with just James Harden and occasionally Kyrie. Kevin Durant is still one of the best defenders in basketball when he's on. His level of versatility will add a new dimension to this team that we just haven't been able to see over the course of the whole year because none of these guys have been hurt. To me, when I look at the Nets, I don't look at their defense as what could be their Achilles heel. I just think it could be the lack of chemistry and the fact these guys haven't played together at all. They haven't played.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I watched the Clippers the last two times they've played. Paul George is playing great, by the way. Now, Paul's done that before in the regular season. So you go into a season and you're like, okay, you lose Doc Rivers. You lose a couple guys like Trez off the bench. And you think they don't have a true point guard, do they? But when I watch the Clippers, I do feel like the last two times I've watched them, ball movement's good. Feel like they got a little chemistry. Paul George has regained the confidence he lost in the postseason. When you look at the Clippers, what do you see?
Still a lot of potential there, and I think they've had some of the same issues they've had in the past where they've just blown some leads or just fallen apart in mid-game, but fact is that when you have some guys like Terrence Mann who have come along, somebody like Luke Kennard who has shown flashes, their depth is better. And Paul George, ultimately, though, if they get the pandemic P that we saw in the playoffs last year, they have no chance. That kind of goes without saying. That's why he is the key to everything here. I mean, if you would get the version of Paul George that we've seen in recent weeks after his struggles dealing with his toe injury, that changes everything for them. When you have two high-level wing players who can score for you, who can create for you, who can defend multiple positions, that's what made them so appealing entering last season, why so many people consider them the favorites. All that's changed over the last year, but that all comes down to Paul George, and I look at his production and more so as an important factor with their upside than their bench or chemistry. It all trickles down from Paul George and Kawhi Leonard.
Are your sources shocked by how dominant Zion has been in the last month? I could make an argument in the last month. He's a top two NBA player. I mean, I liked him coming out of college. I said it in college. I said he'll be a top 20 player second year early in the league. I loved him. He's better than I thought. His efficiency is insane. What do your sources say? What do you think?
people around the league are a bit surprised that he's doing this, considering the circumstances with Steven Adams at center, with Eric Bledsoe at the two, with a lack of spacing around him. And that's what's so amazing, the fact he's putting up 30 points per game with elite efficiency, playmaking the way he is, despite the fact he isn't operating with four shooters around him. And that's a scary thought when you think about when he falls into a situation in which he has ideal personnel around him. And not to mention, I mean, the fact is he's just tapping into his potential here, Colin. Everything we're seeing him do, he's still improving his handle. He's still adding advanced moves off the dribble. He's still developing as a shooter off the dribble. This is only the beginning of what could be, if he's healthy, a historic Hall of Fame career.
God, I love watching his highlights. He's such a clever player. You know, big guys don't often have the touch. He has got a silky, soft touch. It's really special. It is. It's a little Sean Kemp. It's a little Carl. It's a little Charles Barkley. But it is definitely 75% Zion. I could sit and watch his highlights all day. All right, Kevin O'Connor at The Ringer. Check him out. Been covering the NBA for a long time. Thanks, Kev.
Thank you, Colin.
By the way, I want to touch on Aaron Rodgers here. So everybody's going crazy. Aaron's going to leave the Packers. When you look at his contract, here's why everybody's freaking out. And this is complicated, so I'll try to simplify it. Is that the Packers could remedy a lot of this, but they haven't fixed his contract. So the Packers could easily create cap space, which they don't have because Aaron's kind of a burden on the cap. He's the number one cap hit. But in order to do that, they'd have to push money down the road. And people think that means you don't like Aaron. Let me make the argument it's a strategy. So Tampa Bay is new money. They are maxing all their credit cards and paying the minimum every month. But they're having the time of their life. But they didn't grow up with the money. And they're like, we may never have this time again in Tampa. We're going to push Tom Brady's money down the road. Brady may be a $24 million cap hit to Tampa in 3 years and not be playing. Green Bay is old money. Listen, we're not going to keep pushing Aaron's money down the road. We're not mortgaging our future. We're the Packers. We're relevant. It's just a strategy. What Green Bay is saying is Aaron's the number one cap hit in the league this year. He's number four next year. We're gonna have to make some tough decisions. Green Bay's got like seven guys making a fortune next year, over $20 million, and they may have to let a couple of them go. But when you're old money, you're more prudent. It's more long term. It's protecting the brand. It is paying off your debt every month. But that's because the Packers are the train. Smooth ride. Always on time. Tampa Bay's history, they're the roller coaster. The highs are great. The lows are often. And they're just pushing their crap down the road. They're like, listen, Brady's old. Win now. Who cares? Green Bay's like, well, we won when Favre was old. We're getting close with Aaron, and he's old. It's a strategy. Green Bay is going to suck it up for 2 years with Aaron and just deal with this massive cap hit and make tough decisions. But they don't want to push their stuff down the road. That's not who they are. Old money sees the world differently than new money. And Tampa is definitely new money. Hour three next.